Hello, welcome to Pathways, where you're invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is Renee Beth Poindexter sitting in for Pathways host Paul O'Brien. Today I have with me the Reverend Dr. Ruth Miller. She's the author of many books. Today we're going to be talking about a specific book that grabbed my attention called The Science of Mental Healing, New Thought Teachers and Healers in America. But before we get to that, I just want you to know that Reverend Dr. Ruth Miller, she's a really unique being. Actually, she earned a doctorate in systems science from Portland State University, and she's been integrating intuition and analysis to impact assessment and decision-making. She also has a master's in cybernetic systems from San Jose State University, with a thesis integrating intuitive methods and system development and policy making. She has written several books, many papers. She is a person that bridges spirituality and science. Dr. Ruth Miller, we are so excited to have you with us today. Thanks for being here.
It's a delight. Thank you, Renee, for asking me.
You are so welcome. Well, this book, you know, to properly introduce you, I should say, I couldn't count the number of books that you have actually written. You are a prolific author. How many would you say you've written in your lifetime?
In my lifetime, I don't think I could count. But the ones that have been published in the last 10 or 15, I think we're up at 26, maybe.
Yeah. I would call that prolific, wouldn't you?
That's up to you.
Absolutely. Well, your topics are really interesting. And, you know, on your website, you call yourself a synthesizer. And I think this is kind of an unusual term. Actually, you call yourself a synthesis of all things relevant to consciousness, human potential, and culture. And, you know, you do work with academic institutions, nonprofits, churches, small businesses to guide them through this confusing world that we're living in today and into this emerging culture. But what exactly is a synthesis?
Very good. It's a term I borrowed from Robert Heinlein. He had written a book about the future history, possible future history for humanity. And one of his periods was the crazy years. And in one of the stories about the crazy years, there was a guy sitting in a coffee shop and he described himself as a synthesis. And I went, oh my goodness, what he's doing is what I do. And it's someone who is not so interested in the analysis, that is the cutting apart and breaking down of data, as taking bits of data and putting them together in new ways.
Ah, I see. And that's where you combine the science, the spirituality, the anthropology, I mean, all these different domains that normally would operate separately. You look for the connecting patterns that brings them together in perhaps unique ways that other people haven't seen. Is that right?
Yeah. I think the tagline on my website is something like, you know, these times require asking different kinds of questions.
Absolutely. Well, we hope we can get to that because this, after reading your book, and the book that we're talking about today again is called The Science of Mental Healing, New Thought and Teachers and Healers in America. So The Science of Mental Healing, New Thought, Teachers and Healers in America, this is something we really need now more than ever. And after reading this book, I felt really uplifted because you tell a story about all these forward-thinking, new thought leaders from the 1800s that were way ahead of their time. And at the same time in the book, you bring forward the most current scientists that are involved in the spirituality and science movement. So I'm just curious, you know, this integration of ancient wisdom and modern science, how did you choose which new thought leaders and healers to write about?
Actually, they sort of emerge out of the cloud pretty thoroughly, pretty effectively. Phineas Parkhurst Quimby is where I start because he is the one who defined the process and the terms back in the 1830s to 1860s. And one of his students, you know, who went on to create a whole movement on her own, was Mary Baker at the time Patterson, who went back to being Mary Baker Glover after she divorced her husband and started teaching Quimby's methods. And then she married Asa Eddy and began to teach her own methods and leave out Quimby's material. And so she became Mary Baker Eddy and founded the Massachusetts College of Metaphysics, which later became the Church of Christ Scientists. But Quimby, as he was working with this method that he was discovering, he was an engineering type of his own. He had several patents. And he, you know, felt that he may have stumbled on the method that Jesus had used in his healings. And so he suggested that this might be the science of the Christ. And then Mary Baker Eddy picked up on that. And one of her students was a woman named Emma Curtis Hopkins back in 1884 and through 85. And during that time, Mrs. Eddy was beginning to realize people were taking her ideas and running with them on their own. And she didn't like that for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. It diluted them. It made them less effective. And so she started reining people in, and Mrs. Hopkins wasn't reinable very much. So she was let go. And she was invited to Chicago, and she became the teacher of teachers. She's known to have at least 11,000 students, 90%+ of whom walked away without any symptoms from whatever their issues were. She's known to have ordained 110 ministers in this idea. Because what happens, apparently, I've seen this happen again and again, her students included Charles Fillmore and Ernest Holmes, people start coming for the idea and the material, and then they realize that traditional church no longer quite works for them, and so then they want church too. So every one of these has started at a school and evolved into something more like church, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah, it is that. Because we many times hear today that there has to be a new systems, right? New churches, new schools, new healthcare. And we get to invent what that might look like. But this book, with the history and then bringing it forward to today, and then the new science that's been emerging, is just fascinating. Because there's some processes and methods that those amazing healers and teachers were teaching back in the 1800s that's a common thread to what healers are doing today. What are some of those processes or examples that you think have the most power for people to recognize about healing that's right here, right now?
Marvelous. So there's a fundamental assumption that grew out of the research, which is fascinating. They didn't assume it from the beginning and build on it. It was, wow, they're operating on a basis of human bodies are physical entities, just like everyone else, right? And then as they do the work, they discover, well, there's something behind that physical entity that seems to be causing that physical entity to do things quite apart from the physical remedies that are happening. And so as they had that experience, you know, then they were drawn into these other approaches. So the fundamental basis of mental healing is that mind controls matter, that mind is running the body, not that mind is a function of the body.
Right. So the mind is not the function of the body, but it controls what the body does. Is that right?
Right. And how the body expresses and what the body is experiencing. So I came into New Thought after years and years in the sciences, you know, interested in consciousness and studying intuition and studying meditation, but not understanding what I've just laid out here. And it took me going through a major health challenge in which the medical world was at a loss, and for which I had a pretty terrifying prognosis. So it took me going through that and realizing that it was only by changing my mental patterns that I could begin to change the physical patterns that led me to do this work.
Wow. Yeah, well, that is, you know, to some people when we say, you know, thoughts are things, I think Napoleon Hill and Wallace Wattles and those people that are familiar with The Science of Getting Rich or Think and Grow Rich, those books, you know, that people, when they started to realize that their thoughts create their reality, and if you change your mind, you change your life. But some people think like, really? That's kind of airy fairy. I don't believe that.
Right.
So what is it going to take, do you think? What, you know?
Well, hopefully not everyone will have to go through a terrifying prognosis to get there.
Exactly.
But I have discovered that many of us do. Many of us need to have what I call a wake-up call, a diagnosis that says you have to stop whatever you have been doing, thinking, saying. You have to stop in order to become well again. And then in the process of becoming well, you see the relationship between your emotional state and your physical state. You see the relationship between your habits of thought and the symptoms that are showing up. And so, you know, you asked how I decided who was in that book, obviously the major teachers who've had the most effect. And one of them was Louise Hay. And she was trained in the tradition that Ernest Holmes developed based on Emma Hopkins and Mary Baker Eddy and Quimby's teachings. But as a religious scientist at the time, they're now called Centers for Spiritual Living, but as a religious science practitioner, a science of mind practitioner, she, you know, would sit with people and hear their symptoms, and she would listen to what they were thinking and saying and believing. And she began to realize there was a direct connection between, say, kidney ailments and repressed anger thoughts that, you know, were not expressed in the moment, you know, or between neck issues and stiff neck thinking, if you will, or mm-hmm. knee issues or ankle issues or, you know, left of the body issues and right, you know, were directly related to what people were expressing in their mental habits. And so she began to help change their mental habits, which began to turn around their symptoms. So she's in the book. And then, you know, there are a few more others after that.
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of interesting because this began, this thinking started in the 1830s, and here it is, 2019. Mm-hmm. And we're still trying to unravel this because we've got a healthcare system that's really not about health. And it's and the people who are looking for wellness are many of them are feeling duped because it's not about going to your doctor and asking for that prescription you just saw on TV. There's another way. And you're offering that. As a matter of fact, you offer a practice that people come to you because there's something about letting go of old thought patterns to create a new possibility. How does that practice work? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It grew out of my own healing process because I was realizing that I had a lot of anger. Some of it I didn't even know I had. It was so thoroughly repressed. And I had a lot of fear and a lot of ideas that weren't serving me, and they were harming my body. So if I could reduce the emotional stress I was experiencing by shifting those thoughts and feelings, then I could help the body to heal. So that was huge for me. And as it emerged, it became a pretty standard process that I could apply whenever anything began to feel anything. I like to say, if it doesn't feel heavenly, it's an opportunity to use this practice, mm-hmm. Whether it's physical or financial or in relationships or any of those things. So the practice is designed to help us get in touch with first the feelings that are there, and let those feelings flow. And it's, it builds on that type of therapy. And then it adds in another form of therapy that says, if I'm hanging on to those feelings, if I'm having those feelings, it doesn't serve me. So I need to find a way to release those feelings. So that's the next piece. How can I release those feelings? And I draw on a variety of spiritual traditions and consciousness and meditation tools to help people do the releasing. And what we discover is that there are usually some people associated with those feelings. And so we go into the chair exercise, some people call it, where we sit down and imagine that we're talking to these people and clear it up. You know, what is it that are the issues and what needs to be said here? And get it all said, get it all expressed, pushed from the body. and released. And we know it's released when the person facing us in the chair opposite that we're imagining is there, or that we shift chairs in some cases to say it, when that person is able to say, you know, you're right. We're done with this. Let's let it go. And both of you feel like you're ready to let it go. And then I entered into a state that comes, it is described in the Course in Miracles, the miracle state. I call it the state of grace, the state of forgiveness, because what's happened here is everything has been given up, let go, given for. I've given up this stuff I've been hanging on to for a new level of peace, a new level of well-being, a new level of connectedness with the people involved. And so the next process then is to make that real and to claim that in my life, which comes straight out of New Thought, claim and affirm. And then having claimed, to feel the experience of it, to feel the new state. So as I was working through things, I'm the only child of a single mom who wasn't very happy as a mother. I had a lot of stuff to work through there. I had been married for 20 years to someone who was uncomfortable in any kind of work situation. So there I was with kids, supporting the family, and I had a lot of stuff there. You know, so right. I realized there was a lot of stuff that had accumulated over the years, and I learned to release it, to express it first, to release it, to experience that state of love and light that could be called grace or forgiveness, and then to claim the new state of our relationship and of my well-being. And then what would happen is I could live from that claim and affirm it, you know, for a while until, oh, it came around again. And what I learned is that each time we do this process, we release about 80%. We can really get into it and really get to that place of feeling the love. And so there's still 20% left, right?
Right.
So 6 months, 6 weeks, 6 years later, that 20% rears its ugly head and I go, oh, I thought I dealt with this.
Right, exactly.
And
exactly.
So when I realize that it's not clearing up by itself, then I go in and I do the process again. Well, that gets rid of another 80%. So now I'm at, what, 4%? So now I get to, you know, go on through life and everything's good. And then, whoops, it rears its ugly head again. I get just as upset. But what's interesting is when I say these percentages, it lasts only a little tiny bit of time compared to the previous time. And it, even though it feels just as yucky, it's really not nearly as intense. I'm much more observing of it. I'm much less caught up in it. So I do the process again, and now I'm down to 0.16% of what it was when I started, right? And then the next time the trigger happens, and I realize later, wow, I didn't get caught by that anymore. I'm done.
Wow. That is so, thank you so much. I hope our listeners are taking notes on this, because that what you just laid out be life-saving. And not only for the people who might be struggling emotionally, physically, mentally right now, but there's this connection that you talk about because of your influence with biologist Rupert Sheldrake and the morphogenic field. Something mm-hmm. happens when one person shifts. How does it impact the rest of us?
Marvelous. Well, what Rupert Sheldrake discovered as an evolutionary biologist was that when there was a mutation in a plant in one part of the world, similar plants or animals would have similar mutations geologically very close together. And it seemed to him to possibly be related to a very old model that biologists have had, that there is in the body somehow a field that defines how the body is going to be shaped. Okay, that we have our hands and arms and legs and feet in the places they are. And someone's actually taken a photo of that field in salamanders, that looking at the embryo of a salamander, he could take a photograph of the fully developed salamander field around the embryo. So that's the morphogenic field. Now, his theory is that that field is energetic, therefore it isn't local. It isn't specific to one entity because it's energy, and energy isn't in one space. It's everywhere. So he developed the theory of morphic resonance. And he's, over the last 40, 50 years since he published that, has had many, many, many people come in with experiments to prove this theory, that when a similar kind of person experiences, you know, that whatever any one person does, let me do that, whatever any one entity does, anyone that's got a field that resonates with that entity is going to have it more easily, going to be able to do that more easily, more rapidly, more effectively. A simple example that he put in the very first book was some people were training mice to do mazes. And so in one part of the planet, there's these guys over here, and they have a whole new baby batch of baby mice in a brand new maze that's never been done before. And they put them through it, and they tell him how long it takes for them to learn how to get to the cheese, the food at the end of the maze. And then they faxed that maze to someone else on a totally different part of the planet who had another batch of brand new baby mice, no connection with the previous ones, and they did it more quickly. They learned it more quickly, and then they faxed it somewhere else, and they learned it even more quickly, and they faxed it somewhere else. So that kind of thing is the example, if you will, of how morphic resonance can work. My personal example experience of it was I had been using guided meditation and visualization for, since the 70s, and I walked into, and I was trained, and with good reason, that it might take 5, 6, 7 minutes before people could settle out of their thoughts enough to focus on the visualization, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in the mid-90s, I walked into actually a room that had Barbara Marx Hubbard and Mary Manning Morrissey. The two of them were together in this room. And Mary Manning Morrissey said to the group, okay, now take a long, slow, deep breath. Now take another one. And take another one. She did a little more slowly than that. And that room was ready for a guided visualization. Mm-hmm. I was floored. 5 to 7 minutes was down to 30 to 40 seconds.
Wow.
And I'm convinced that's an example of morphic resonance.
Okay, well, you know what? I think this morphic resonance capacity and where we are now in our society, and I'm sure most of the listeners listening to this program right now would say, doesn't that lift us up to say that we're in the possibility of creating a brand new universe based on the thoughts and decisions we're making today, and that we're not at the effect of what may be on the news or what other people are saying is wrong with the world, that we have more power than we realize? Is that part of your message?
Absolutely. And, you know, you can make yourself at effect of what's on the news. And that is by only paying attention to what's on the news. But if
that's
you
right.
choose not to.
Right.
Yeah. Then what you do, yeah, there's one of the master teacher, Emma Curtis Hopkins, used to say, keep your eyes single. Focus on that which you wish to see more of. She called it your good. Focus on your good. Focus on the ways in which it is being manifest in your world, in your life, in your body, in your relationships, and focus on the possibility of more of it emerging. In fact, she used the word good, the good, interchangeably with the word God. And mm-hmm. It's interesting, the Dalai Lama was handed a book, Daily Word, which is based on Emma's teachings through the Fillmores and Unity, and he looked at it and he said, I have no disagreement. I would simply use the word good instead of God.
Awesome. Well, that's a powerful message. And, you know, Ruth, I wish we had more time, but we're just not enough time for this big topic. So could you just direct people to where they could go to find out more information about your message and any events that you might have in your website?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. We've referred to it a couple of times. The website is Ruth L. Miller, PhD. .com. And there are that exercise we talked about is right in the middle of the front page, the first page. My schedule is on there for the workshops that I'll be doing. I do one in Bend the first Saturday of most months. I mean, North Bend and Coos Bay in the Coos Bay area of Oregon. But I'll be in Bend on the 23rd and 24th of March doing a workshop and doing the Sunday talk at the Unity there. And I do Sunday talks at the Unitarian churches in Florence and Coos Bay several Sundays a month.
Well, I know you're extremely busy. And as a matter of fact, when you go to Ruth's website, you're going to see that she's doing some amazing research with the Gaia Living Institute, the Gaia Living Systems Institute, in which she's a co-founder, along with the Institute of Noetic Studies. And we don't have enough time to go into all that, but could you just briefly say what that study is about?
Sure. The Institute of Noetic Sciences has started a project going beyond their usual consciousness research into looking at mediums and channeling. And so I worked with them to develop a database of the literature that's out there. And that database is now on another site that I'm involved in, i-dias.org, which is the Interdimensional Institute for Advanced Studies. So most of my work around the channeling is on that one, i-dias.org. But my other work is all pretty much summarized on my own site, Ruth L. Miller, PhD.
Okay, fabulous. Well, thank you. For those of you that turned in late, this is Renee Beth Poindexter sitting in for Paul O'Brien. And today we've been visiting with the Reverend Dr. Ruth Miller, who is the author of many books, but today we've been talking about the science of mental healing, new thought, teachers and healers in America. So I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to the Pathways interview program, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. Again, this is Renee Beth reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways and its podcasts. This is the interview program dedicated to personal and cultural transformation. Thanks again for tuning in and for being a part of it.